It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. In 2017, New York Times conservative columnist Ross Douthat wrote that Donald Trump's cabinet should invoke the 25th Amendment, thus introducing U.S. citizens to the existence of an amendment to the Constitution that might remove a president from office. This week, someone identified as a senior White House official wrote an unsigned New York Times op-ed that the cabinet discussed doing just that, but ultimately didn't want to precipitate a constitutional crisis. So, what is the 25th Amendment? Has it ever been invoked? And has the U.S. ever dealt with a presidential crisis close to this before? We're going to ask that of Kenneth C. Davis. He is the author of Don't Know Much About History and Don't Know Much About the American Presidents, among many other titles. His website is don'tknowmuch.com. Ken, welcome to the program.
It is a pleasure, as always, to be with you. Thank you, Carrie.
So, looking back, have we ever seen this kind of conflict in a president's administration?
Well, I'd have to say that as a person who lived daily through the Watergate summer, uh-huh. watching it, that's the closest we can come with that. But even that, with perhaps a little nostalgia, strikes me as completely seemly. Compared to what we are watching today. So no, there really is no precedent for this level of what is happening with the administration inside the White House and certainly anonymous op-eds by presumably high-ranking cabinet official or White House official making such claims and invoking the specter of the 25th Amendment, mm-hmm. which is, as you mentioned, a curiosity to most people.
Yes, it is. So I want to talk a little more about this, the connection the Watergate issue and how it informs what we're doing, what we're looking at now. You said that was much more seemly. What were the differences?
Well, first of all, I would say that we had a president who obviously now we know had committed acts of certainly high crimes and misdemeanors because he was certainly going to be impeached if Richard Nixon had not otherwise resigned. I would remind people also, however, that we are in the 45th anniversary, the first use of the 25th Amendment with the resignation of Spiro Agnew,
right.
Richard Nixon's first vice president and a very, very fiery spokesperson and defender of Richard Nixon. He resigned in October of 1973, 45 years ago, and we all learned a little Latin at the time. The phrase, I believe, was nolo contendere, and I may be mispronouncing it, and everyone was scrambling to find out what that means, which basically says, I don't contest these charges, and mm-hmm. I'm resigning the office. That was the first time that the 25th Amendment got invoked. So even though we had this extraordinary moment where a sitting vice president resigns in disgrace, the process worked rather smoothly. And of course, Gerald Ford was then made the new vice president, the unelected vice president.
Right.
That then led to, of course, Nixon's resignation, and the 25th Amendment comes back into effect again, and Gerald Ford becomes president under the 25th Amendment, and then names another vice president, happened to be, many people will forget, governor of New York, Nelson D. Rockefeller, a long, staunch Republican figure. So this did happen. And, of course, it caused tremendous it didn't have the sense of a crisis. It didn't have the sense of things unraveling because the process that had been put in place under the 25th Amendment, enacted, by the way, after the death of John F. Kennedy, ratified, I should say, really made the process work. And one didn't feel that there was a constitutional crisis because the Constitution had worked exactly as the amendment was meant to work. We are now in a position where we're talking about the 25th Amendment in a very different context. But that was why I say it felt, looking back from the vantage point of this time, as much uproar as the Watergate summer and the Watergate hearings and the eventual resignation of Richard Nixon caused, it felt like the process was working. It felt like Congress was doing its job. I feel that many people today would say we don't have that same sense of institutional responsibility.
The process was working. You don't see the process working today.
Well, primarily in the sense that Congress, which is supposed to be a separate and co-equal branch of government, seems not to be exercising its full responsibilities in terms of oversight of the executive branch's decisions. And that's clearly and obviously because that both houses of Congress are in the hands of the Republican Party. And that's happened many times in our history. But it seems that the institution of the Congress, and certainly was true in the Watergate era, when there was much more bipartisanship regarding the investigation and then the ultimate move to impeach Richard Nixon. Of course, many, many Republicans back then, we don't want to, glorify this or paint over it, many of the Republicans back then also had to be dragged kicking and screaming to that conclusion, and it was really only the complete revelation of the tapes that so clearly indicated that Richard Nixon had been involved in an obstruction of justice and cover-up that led Republicans to finally say, yes, he's got to go.
So this anonymous senior White House official, and coupled with Bob Woodward's book, which talked to a lot of people in the White House, is this the equivalent of a tape? People actually in the White House saying the same things, saying these things?
I don't think that it feels like it. Certainly doesn't have the catastrophic impact of the revelation that Richard Nixon's White House conversations had been taped, and that then those tapes were then revealed, which of course took a Supreme Court decision. Again, we had a Supreme Court then that entered into this conversation and did its role appropriately in a historic sense, and ruled that these tapes certainly should be made public, and that was finally the unraveling. Because we are dealing with primarily the anonymous testimony of people who want to, affect some change, I don't feel that it has the anywhere near the impact of the White House tapes, which were eventually published in book form and made widely available, and every American at the time who wanted to could read them and see them. So there was no doubt that these things had been said and these acts had been committed. Right now, we are relying upon anonymous testimony, and that is, of course, always to some degree suspect.
So in Watergate, we've got about 30 seconds till break, but in Watergate, John Dean is the one who broke the idea of the tapes. And
it was actually a man named Alexander Butterfield, okay. John Dean was the key witness in testifying what was on those tapes.
Okay, so if that were to happen now, if somebody from the White House were to step forward now, would that make a difference the way John Dean made a difference? Yes or no? And then we'll get to the details after the break.
Yes, maybe.
Okay, fine. We are processing the meaning of the New York Times op-ed published this week and the history of turmoil in the presidency with author Ken C. Davis. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. In a scathing anonymous op-ed published in the New York Times this week, a White House senior official mentioned that the cabinet had considered invoking the 25th Amendment to remove the president from office. The 25th Amendment has only been around, as you heard Ken Davis say, since 1967. And as you heard, it has only been invoked by three presidents, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, and George W. Bush. Nixon invoked it when he resigned, Reagan and Bush during medical procedures. But the section of the 25th Amendment the op-ed refers to has never been invoked in history. We're taking your calls. What did you think of this letter? Do you think that the 25th Amendment should be there? And what do we know about it? We're going to dig into that in a moment. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. We are talking this morning to Ken Davis. He is an author and historian. He has written Don't Know Much About History and Don't Know Much About American Presidents. It makes me want to sing, Ken, when I read the titles of your book. So let's get to this, what we ended with before. John, I just remember seeing the tapes of John Dean testifying before Congress and everybody gasping when he talked about tapes and when he sort of gave much more detailed information. If somebody from the White House, who currently in the White House, were to go to Congress and do this, what would the impact be now?
It's, of course, impossible to say. First of all, we don't know the level of the person who wrote this. And, you know, certainly if it were a person with the stature, for instance, of the Secretary of Defense or the Secretary of State, that would have far more meaning than someone who might be the Undersecretary for European Affairs and the Defense Department. So that would certainly play into it, I think that such a resignation would still resignation and public an announcement of this idea would have far more immediate effect. Right now, we've gotten into the situation where the op-ed, because it is anonymous, has really spawned this great big guessing game, making this yet one more aspect of a television reality show. Guess. What's my line? Who am I?
Right.
That's unfortunate that we've gamified this very, very significant moment in our history. So the fact is that few in history, very few cabinet-level officers resign in protest over policy. It's really rare. I'm scratching my head. Immediately, one comes to mind. One a little over 100 years ago, we were in the midst of World War One, of course, and whether we should get into World War One. And the Secretary of State resigned.
William
Jennings Bryan, and he resigned because he thought that Woodrow Wilson's response to the sinking of the Lusitania, which was pretty mild, has still gone too far. Bryant did not want the United States to get involved in fighting in what was then called the Great War. His resignation really was stunning at the time, but it kind of is a historical footnote at this point because, of course, then in 1917, we did declare war on Germany, and 100 years ago, right now, we were in the midst of some of the worst fighting of World War One.
So, Ken, I want to get to this. We have 7 minutes left, and I feel like this may take the entire 7 minutes. I want to know what the 25th Amendment is. Can you lay that out for us?
Okay. There are four parts to it, essentially, and it creates an orderly form of succession for the president and the vice president if they have to leave office, leave office either by death, resignation, or some other being forced to resign. It also covers a temporary disability, and that's the reason it has been invoked three times recently, once by Ronald Reagan, twice by George Bush when they were undergoing medical procedures during which they would be anesthetized and unable to fill fulfilled their functions. So it's the Constitution has worked well in those situations. Many scholars have argued that Reagan, when he was shot, should have the 25th Amendment should have been invoked. Then it was not, and there was no crisis that came out of that. So the amendment has worked well in those cases. It has also worked well in the case, as we mentioned earlier, of the resignation of a vice president, Spiro Agnew, and then the resignation of the president, Richard Nixon, both replaced and new officers named by and approved by the Congress. So this is worked. The part that has not been tested is the fourth part, which is when the majority of a cabinet and the vice president agree that the president must be removed from office. It's never been invoked, obviously. It's rarely even been hinted at, although during Ronald Reagan's tenure in his later years, there was some question about his mental acuity. He was examined by doctors and found to be fit, and so the issue went away.
And from what I understand, reading about it yesterday, I did a lot of research on this, a majority of the cabinet, so there are now 15 cabinet members, and eight of them would have to say, would have to write a letter along with the vice president to Congress, and they would send it to the Senate President Pro Tem, who is now Orrin Hatch, and they would send it to the Speaker of the House, who is Paul Ryan, and then the president would be suspended, essentially, and and then the president could there's a mechanism for the president to fight back and get his job.
That's right. He can contest this, and then it could there's a very, very specific calendar laid out of how soon this has to happen. And people would say, well, this is a constitutional crisis. Well, I don't think it is a crisis because the Constitution allows for it. So the Constitution would be working just as it was, as the amendment was written, and again passed in 1967, because the founders and the framers of the Constitution didn't anticipate many of these questions. And in fact, when William Henry Harrison died in office, the first president to die in office, there were questions whether John Tyler, the vice president, was actually the president now or just the acting president. He established the idea that the vice president becomes the president, although there was no mechanism then for naming a new vice president. So this was a question that went through American history for a long time until the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and then Congress realized that we needed to systematically state how this procedure should work.
Okay, so my question, I have lots of questions about this, but the next one is, if the vice president says, no, I'm not going to go along with this, but a majority of the cabinet does, can the 25th Amendment be invoked?
Not as I read it, and again, I'm not neither a lawyer nor specifically a constitutional scholar, but I would read it as whenever the vice president and a majority of either of the principal officers of the executive department or such other body as Congress. Now, that's
an interesting part, too.
That's an interesting part, too. That could be if a majority of the Congress were to vote such a thing. Again, this is all untrodden ground, as George Washington once said about the presidency itself when he took over. He said, I walk on untrodden ground. We are in untrodden ground here with the 25th Amendment. Obviously, it is a really high bar that the Constitution sets for invoking this fourth article of the 25th Amendment, just as it's a very high bar for impeachment and removal from office. The founders did believe that there must be a way to remove a president who was either treasonous or criminal or unfit in some other way, but they set that bar very high so it wouldn't just become a political act. Although Gerald Ford famously said in 1970, I think it was, that an impeachable offense is anything that a majority of a Congress considers it.
Interesting. And I think illegally that may be. I want to talk about the possibility of impeachment, bring in the idea of Bob Mueller, who is investigating a lot of things surrounding the president, perhaps even the president. If there are charges and Bob Mueller comes up with something and there's this specter of impeachment, if Congress changes hands, would that then maybe force the cabinet to say, okay, let's do the 25th Amendment, because then we can just kind of get it over with and we don't have to go through these long drawn out hearings?
Gee, that's highly speculative, highly interesting, and there requires a lot of moving parts there, mm-hmm. of course. And we don't even have any clue, because the Mueller investigation has been incredibly well designed mm-hmm. to prevent such leaks. We don't know when or if it will end. There's been some question about whether there would be any other announcements or indictments at this point before the election. There's a lot of speculation about that. So it's really, really difficult to say what would happen should Mueller make such an announcement, especially before the midterm elections. So much is going to hinge, I think, upon those midterm elections and control of either or both houses of Congress.
We have been talking to Kenneth C. Davis. He is the author of Don't Know Much About History and Don't Know Much About the American Presidents. He has been taking us through the 25th Amendment and turmoil in the presidency in history. Thank you, Ken, for joining us.
It's my pleasure. A lot to talk about here. We'll watch where it goes.
It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.